Okay, we're going to step in another area of intrigue, as it were, with my next guest. His book, Atlantis, Alien Visitation, and Genetic Manipulation, is loaded with potential. That's a great title. And the book is terrific. It's the work of Michael Tsarian. He's an Irishman, born in Ireland. He's an expert on the occult histories. Now, occult doesn't mean evil. Remember that. It means secret. Of Ireland and America. He's done many things. He likes to go at it in the great tradition of some of the great men of our time and earlier times, including Emmanuel Velikovsky, William Bramley, whose book is really a classic, Barbara Marciniak, Lawrence Gardner, and Eric von Däniken. Michael considers the consequences to civilization of extraterrestrial involvement and clarifies much of the disinformation about Atlantis and prehistory. He also addresses the orchestrated chaos of modern times and reveals how the political and military machinations of the present have indeed origins in the events of the ancient past. So let's find out some about what he does and what he thinks and his views of all of this as we welcome him to the program. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Jeff. Nice to be with you.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you so much.
Tell me more about your last name.
Oh, that's... Well, as you said in the introduction, I am from Ireland, but my mother was actually from the Himalayas. She was Indian from the northern Himalayas.
Ah.
And that's where that name comes from. It's probably one of the reasons also why I actually got interested in this kind of subject matter, because as lots of scholars realize, there are tremendous connections racially between the Celtic people and the, you know, the Indians. There's long been speculation about the movement of the races.
Interesting, yeah. Well, we have the Basques and others. These, we can't trace them back far enough, but yes, there are a lot of ties and threads running all over the place. It's interesting.
Certainly in my life, it was a conundrum to be both, you know, Irish and Indian, because that's a very combustible mixture, and you have the mystics on one side of the Indian, and you got the rebels on,
right.
on the Irish side, so it's a hell of a mix.
Yeah, well, I assume you're single. And
you can say that again.
Yeah. All right. What does Tsarian mean? Is that like Smith or Jones in...
I really don't know. I think there's a village in Tibet or a town in Tibet that has that name.
Mm-hmm.
Various people send me, origins. I'm very interested in word origins. But it's really hard to say. They say the word T-S-A-R or Tsar.
Mm-hmm.
There's an old word for, lord or king or what have you. You know,
mm-hmm.
some people have connected it to the sun.
Right.
It's a very interesting thing to look into, but nothing definitive yet.
Right. Well, you're not running for king, so it doesn't matter.
No, exactly,
All right. Now, how do we go about, as a researcher and an author, of clearing up some of the mysteries about Atlantis? You say you can bring these things into focus.
Yeah.
How do you do it when we really don't have all that? What we really have to go on,
right.
basically, is Plato and Edgar Cayce.
We have more to go on, except that modern scholarship is, as the usual, very tunnel vision. It's not just within the academic world that they are tunnel vision.
Mm-hmm.
My problem is that I've also seen a lot of disinformation and a lot of tunnel vision, even within the so-called, alternative community.
I would second that in a heartbeat, and
right.
I tell you the truth. I think most of it is pure speculation at best.
And it doesn't need to be, because if people do their homework, which is not just...
hit a few websites and
yes, exactly.
A little bit of information
right.
and mix it in with your own ego, and you got a book. That's how.
Yeah. And they basically roll off the press, and each one either repeating the nonsense of the first lot,
right,
or just coming up with the wildest speculations. I mean, I'm glad that there's something out there better than nothing, because I like to look at the idea of having more knowledge,
right.
like Bogreitz has said many times, get your arms around as much of the information as you can.
Sure.
But at the same time, I'm not a favor of just wild speculation and diversity and chaos. You know, there has to be a purist approach as well to knowledge, because we can, like we are now, we're an information overkill. And I don't know, maybe it is my Irish blood or something. I get really personally peeved with that when there's only half truth, I think is more dangerous than lies.
Oh, amen.
You know, I set to work about doing that. That was really originally, because I've been studying this since I was 13. It's always been an interesting hobby. But when it started to turn to become a professional thing and do books and do conferences and talks and radio and TV, I think that the main motive was just what you said, to basically start just very simply to clear up the disinformation. Now, it became more. It's become more over time. But originally, the idea was to just go, look, these individuals are not telling the truth. Their books are filled with disinformation.
Well, they're filled with stolen. It's called plagiarism. And it's funny because, as you said, and very appropriately, so many times someone will dish up a full course meal of BS, and pieces of it start showing up in book after book after book. And nobody gives credit. It's funny how there's no attribution anymore. Everyone presents their book, his or hers, almost everyone.
Because there's, you know what it is? It's a loss of respect for knowledge. It's a loss of respect for the traditions of the ancients, for real, true research. Now, you get certain people like the Michael Cremos of the world, you know, and of course, you get the wonderful scholars who are out there. And I'm not pointing fingers at individuals when I think of this. I'm purely a lover of knowledge. That's what philosophy means. It's a lover of wisdom, a lover of knowledge. It's not my position to point to individuals.
Right.
Certainly I can point to their scholarship. And for instance, Zachariah Sitchin, God love him. He's done some fantastic work. But I'm just using him as a case in point now to illustrate to your listeners what we're talking about here. In that man's work, he specializes only in the Babylonian Sumerian record. There is almost next to no cross-referencing with all the other mythologies of the world, you know, which is needed to be done. Here you are studying a thing that is mythology. You need to cross-reference your findings with the Aryan, with the Indian, with the African, with the Mayan, with the Celtic. And he does not do this. He's found out wonderful things, but you must cross-reference it because there's glaring errors in some of the work that needs to be erased. And if he had done this cross-referencing thing, which many scholars have who came before him, then they would have tidied up some of the more erroneous areas regarding the planet X and regarding Atlantis and regarding the Anunnaki and what have you.
Right.
You know, my work is comparative. You compare all the religions because, as Emmanuel Velikovsky knew and as Commons Beaumont understood, they're all saying the same thing. They're all the races of the ancient world were referring to the same series of events, the same, events that took place throughout this planet. And the times may look different when we interpret them, or the poetic language, especially in Celtic Ireland. Why do we think that when people read my book, they have such a shock and thinking that the Celtic record has such an incredible archive of knowledge about these matters? Because it's always been put before us as fairy folk tales, a magical tradition, something not to be taken seriously. And here's one of the most powerful archives of knowledge, the Arthurian and Celtic tradition, that talk about the war of the gods, the coming of evil into the world, the subjugation of women, the fall from grace, the fall from truth. All of that is in there, that they talk about super weaponry, advanced weaponry. They talk about genetic manipulation. It's all there for the eye to read.
Yeah, but nobody knows that. They don't study.
No, because it's been put before us habitually as either fiction or something that's not worth serious consideration.
I remember I brought Eric von Daniken to Santa Barbara and presented him once. And I'm sure you've met him on a number of occasions. And Eric is a wild man. He is so full. He's like, you have the same kind of intensity. You're not quite as excitable, but
no,
I can see it. He has a great appreciation for classic scholarship.
And you know what's even more impressive about Eric von Daniken is that he has withstood the most unbelievable onslaught of abuse and vitriolic attack for over 25 years. And he stood his ground, and he's back with a big smile on his face going, I was right. I held to my truth. I'm not vindictive, and we're going to revisit this again because the time is right now. There's more interest than there ever has been from people to study these great, interesting mysteries. We're no longer going to fall for what we've been told from these college corridors of propaganda anymore. And there he is standing, you know, again, has now some PBS shows or Discovery shows or whatever, you know, and I'm congratulate the guy for holding his ground, because he was just literally, as many of these scholars are, terrorized.
Well, look what they did to Velikovsky.
He's always on my mind. You know, my book is dedicated to Emmanuel Velikovsky and Commons Beaumont and individuals of that nature, because of the tremendous losses that these individuals And our world needs to know about these lost scholars, you know.
Well, Wilhelm Reich as well, another martyr.
Wilhelm Reich is one of my main mentors. I've studied all his work and I have the greatest respect for the man.
Right.
And these are the people that could see. We're wondering why there's so much travesty in our world, why there's so much criminality and injustice and disease and whatnot. My God, if we don't realize that we've already suppressed and murdered and incarcerated those very people who had our answers. It's not that we don't have answers. We have had plenty of solution givers and solution teachers. But what do we do to them? We've got to revisit their work because we're not going to get anywhere in the next 10 years unless we revisit these great teachers' work.
Right. Well, we kill them is what we do with them. We still burn people at the stake, figuratively.
Absolutely. I bet you a lot of your listeners do not know that Carl Sagan, his day job was Cornell, you know, University, whatever. His nighttime job or his main job that he was employed for was to hound Emanuel Velikovsky to death. Everyone's heard of Carl Sagan, but nobody's heard of Emanuel Velikovsky. They don't know that Emanuel Velikovsky was completely lambasted, was professionally ridiculed, and Carl Sagan was the guy leading those refutations.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, and there's not a single discovery or invention or prophecy that Emanuel Velikovsky made that has been denied or shown to be false.
Right.
They're all shown to be correct.
I agree.
You know what I mean?
Velikovsky is a name we have discussed on the air here for many years.
I'm so happy to hear that. In fact, I have the greatest respect for you, Jeff, personally, and also for your show, because it's like an oasis in a sea of disinformation. It's very, very privileged to hear. It keeps me feeling, you know, very optimistic because of these kinds of the show that you're doing, you know.
Thank you, Michael. All right, we'll pause here for just a couple of minutes and come right back. Michael Tsarian's book, Atlantis, Alien Visitation and Genetic Manipulation, and that is a big topic now, genetic manipulation. Back in a minute. Okay, Jeff Rentz back with you, and I'm glad to have Michael on the program tonight. I think you can already tell he is deadly serious about classical scholarly research. No hocus pocus, no plagiarism, no internet browsing, and then publish it yourself stuff. And boy, there's everybody's got a book now or two, and so few of them are honestly worth reading because they're all derivative of other people's flawed works. I mean, there's no real new research, Michael, to speak of, that I see come down the road very often anymore.
Very rarely. And, you know, I think that one of the problems why we haven't really understood a lot of the common denominator facts about our world and who we are is because of so much information. The average individual doesn't have the 30 years that, say, I've put in to doing this homework. You know, I get compliments from authors and, I mean, readers all the time saying, you know, you've saved me doing the 3 decades of, you know, work in your videos, DVDs, and in your book. You know, you've saved us because this is a monumental subject. It's a very important subject.
Well,
but it's not something that the average person can squeeze into their busy schedule.
No, they can't. And, in fact, because it is so intense, many people just won't. They can't do it. It's too much for them, and that's okay. The book is Atlantis, Alien Visitation and Genetic Manipulation. And we are, of course, playing God now with genes, playing with genes. And I don't know where it's going to end, but probably not in a very good place because of the propensity for humankind to do whatever it can do, right or wrong. If they can do it, they're going to do it. It's a very dicey and dangerous situation we are in now. But this is not new. Genetic manipulation apparently has been around for a long time. We just weren't the ones doing it. That's the bottom line. If I can, before we start on the book, a lot of people, and I really think we should honor this man with just a couple of minutes, Emanuel Velikovsky. It's a name that people have heard, but they don't know a damn thing about him. And let's just do a couple minutes on what he stood for and what he actually was able to put together in his own intellect.
Well, first of all, Emanuel Velikovsky is a man who was an extremely erudite scholar in his own sense, but he had one thing that always will put him or anyone else against the orthodox, and that was he was a free thinker. he had the scholarship, so let's get that straight. He wasn't just some, you know, fringe, freaky hippie out there, you know, waxing lyrical.
He wasn't a daydreamer, I understand.
No, he was a good friend of Sigmund Freud. They worked together on a book about Egypt. But Velikovsky was a remarkable individual who did not just buy into what the Orthodox individuals have been saying about cosmic catastrophe. So Immanuel Velikovsky wrote about our solar system. He was an expert on the solar system. He knew that the planet Venus would be found to be the only planet in our system that would go on an anti-clockwise axis, which it was found that it does.
Mm-hmm.
He knew that the temperature of Venus would be exactly 800 degrees, which it later was discovered.
And this is in the 1950s,
yes,
folks.
Long before any of this was ever even remotely discovered, he understood many things about the celestial heavens. And he also, most importantly, why a lot of people need to know about Immanuel Velikovsky is that he was the one who basically understood that all the different civilizations and countries, no matter if it's the Vikings or the Celtic people or the Maoris or the New Zealanders or the Maya, they're all talking about catastrophe, but it's always been considered nonsense because, you see, it appeared that they're all talking about these events at different times. He realized that, no, they're not. These individuals just have different calendars. But if you make an objective calendar and you plot all of these individual time levels, mm-hmm. predictions, and you put them on to an objective calendar, they all turn out to be at the exact same time historically. So he basically rectified this lie that the Orthodox was hiding under, saying, well, of course, none of these people could be telling you the truth because they're all dating this thing at different times, and therefore it's preposterous and we didn't think about it.
Pretty shallow way to dismiss
they'll pull on anything because these people have a lot to hide. They have inserted fallacious ice ages, millions of years in length between us and our ancestors because they're desperate. There's a cabal in this world that is absolutely desperate. We know about different secret agendas, but what people need to realize is that there's a mega agenda coming down to us from about 50,000 years ago. It is imperative mm-hmm. for the forces that control this planet to not let us understand where we actually come from, that we have had high civilizations, just like Gerald Hancock and others are now discovering. But Velikovsky and Beaumont and many writers from the 19th century had already been discovering this. And Velikovsky's work is absolutely important because he said that, look, the Mayans maybe use a Venusian calendar or a lunar calendar. The Celtic people over here use a tree calendar. You know, everyone uses a different calendar, so of course they're dating it in their own secular time at a different time. But let's not mistake the fact that these catastrophes happen at the same time.
Right, and every culture, just to repeat what Michael said, has at its ancient basis a catastrophe. There's always one there. Now, how far, we go back somewhere between 11,500 years and 12,500, where Edgar Cayce, of course, and so many others, and the geological record now shows something catastrophic happened.
Good point.
But that was not the only ancient catastrophe. That was one.
Now, in my book, and that's exactly right, there are two catastrophes. I mean, of course, in the millions of years our planet has been here, there's obviously, can't refute that. There has been a lot of travesties and upheavals, but the two that very much affected or influenced our actual history mm-hmm. are very recent in time. In
Correct.
History, they're very, very recent. And one was the famous deluge, but that happened about 50,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a polar shift, a polar axial shift that was happening about 13,500 years ago. And what your audience needs to understand is what we've discovered, and I talk about extensively, is that the science is now in to prove that Atlantis existed. And this comes from Orthodox official science from Oxford and Cambridge University
mm-hmm.
and from the MIT to prove that not only Atlantis existed, but there was cataclysms in the very recent past and that there was this polar shift that sank the continents of the ancient world.
Indeed. All right. Back in just a couple minutes, we'll continue our excellent conversation with Michael Tesarian. His book, Atlantis, Alien Visitation and Genetic Manipulation, is available. Just click on his name and take a look at his beautiful website. It's loaded, and we will continue. Okay, and we're back. The preface to Michael's book kind of starts out and sums it up. During the next 10 years, the human race is destined to finally discover the facts about its true origins and its destiny. And it may come far quicker than 10 years, Michael, but I think you're right. We are literally teetering on the edge of so many of these old paradigms of obfuscation, lies, and deceit and distortion falling apart. The Internet's playing a role on it, but there is a great awakening among people who are interested in that kind of thing.
This is what happens. I saw it in Belfast. The idea is that sometimes people need a good kick up the you-know-where in order to get back to the original principles that undergird our societies. Well, we slip away from that.
We're going to go through, I'm afraid, a lot of very deadly and disastrous times before we get there. But
that's all right. See, what we have to understand, that the people of the light
have
nothing to
cycle.
Fear.
That's the normal cycle. Right. No, that's true. That's the normal cycle.
It's a normal cycle. I'm so glad to hear you say that, because I keep, you know, when I do a talk, people will come over to me and go, you know, and I'm very solution-oriented. I don't ever stop without giving major solutions, but still you have people who are in fear. And it's like the, you know the old cop dramas where they say, if you're not guilty, you have nothing to fear?
Right.
Well, it's the same thing that goes now historically. If you are connected, if you're centered, if your moral body and your spiritual body and your emotional body are sound, and you have not climbed on others, and your karma is in good shape, you have nothing to worry about, no matter if it's earth changes. Because again, you see, there's a whole culture out there in the media to create a paranoid society. You know, we have a situation out in the world in which they're desperate to have us fearing everything. You know, all you hear about is identity theft and, you know, germs in our houses and coming epidemics and, oh, my God, terrorists under the bed and, you know, food is impure and weather patterns are getting distorted. And people just shiver under the bed without realizing, hang on a minute, this is all disseminated for a purpose in order to get you to be in paranoia, to fear, to be begging government to save your ass. You know, we don't understand that a lot of this is totally unreal.
And all injected, the masses are being inoculated with all of this crap.
Right.
By television, sure.
It's a diet. It's a drip-feed diet. David Icke calls the television the hypnotist in the corner, you know, and he's so right. Yeah. It's a situation in which we are being drip-fed. I mean, you know, we have to realize that this is a very... What Aldous Huxley, who was one of the prime movers in this conspiracy, he called it a dictatorship without tears. You know, would you mind if I read a small quote from him so that people understand?
No, go ahead. Aldous Huxley, not to be confused with George Orwell, friends. If you're not well read, don't confuse the two.
And the reason why I'm reading these quotes is because I want to emphasize that we talked about scholarship earlier on. One of the in life, when you are into these alternative subjects, you're often termed a conspiracy nut. But you see, what these detractors don't understand is that if you look up the word conspiracy in a proper sociological dictionary, like the Collins Dictionary, or get online and look up the word conspiracy, it will tell you that a conspiracy is only something that is reprehensible if there's two things that happen. One is that if it is too zealously or overzealously delivered, and if it is without any backup, okay? That is what is reprehensible about any conspiracy. Well, as you know from the people on your show, and, you know, in my work also, you know, yes, I do believe there's a conspiracy out there. I don't believe it's all coincidence.
Oh, I don't. Yeah. Wait, look, here's the bottom line. We don't need to be labeled conspiracy theorists. We don't believe in conspiracy theory. We believe in conspiracies because the world is run, has been, and
That's
always
right.
will be run on conspiracy bases.
And since there are detractors out there, I want to make sure that they understand fully that in my work specifically, the delivery of these conspiracy facts is both eloquent and backed up by unbelievable proof. I go straight to the horse's mouth. I'm not so interested, like we talked earlier, about other writers in the genre. I go to the Carol Quigleys, and I go to the Colonel Mandel houses, and I go to the original sources, you know, the Adam Weishaupts and the Albert Pikes. I've gone to their work. These are the people who are the main movers in this. I've gone to the Freemasons and the Bilderbergers and their own work, so that people are, they're not hearing anything from me. I'm not, you know, asserting any point of view. You're never going to hear that from me.
As any great researcher, you're supposed to be a conduit, which is what you're saying.
Right, and here is a perfect proof. Here's Aldous Huxley in his book, A Brave New World Revisited. He says the 21st century will be the era of the world controllers. The older dictators fell because they could never supply their subjects with enough bread, enough circuses, enough miracles and mysteries. Under a scientific dictatorship, education will really work. Most men and women will grow up to love their servitude and will never dream of revolution. There seems to be no good reason why a thoroughly scientific dictatorship should ever be overthrown. What he's saying there is that, I mean, two things come out of this. Not only is the man admitting cold-bloodedly that there is a conspiracy, mm-hmm. that they're working overnight to mm-hmm. enslave the human race, the man has the utter condescension to then say, but don't worry, folks, you're going to love it. You're going to like it. We're bending over backwards not only to enslave you, please understand, we're making it a dictatorship with smile. We're going to make it a dictatorship with tears. You're going to love it, and you're going to love us for giving it to you. And if you look around in this world today, you know, I hate to point this out, but unfortunately, the dreams of these maniacs has actually come to pass. The worst nightmares of Marquis de Sade and George Orwell and Bertrand Russell and their whole clan are actually reality today.
Thanks to the ingeniousness of these people, they were brilliant in their own way.
They were brilliant.
And now they have unmatched technology. I suspect in the ancient past technology of this sort was around, but they have it now. And when he talks about scientific, he's talking about technology.
He's talking about, you see, the word technology is a very interesting word in itself. It doesn't mean what a lot of people mean. These are social engineers, people who are dedicated to controlling the masses. They understand that you don't just come out of Harvard and Cornell and suddenly get the reins of government in order to be able to steer the ship of state. That's a very complex thing. There's detailed operating manuals about how you control the masses of the human race. And in my work and other researchers' work, in the work of Jordan Maxwell, David Icke, others, we're trying to draw attention to the way in which this is done, because if you think you know the answers, you won't ask the question. And we have to discover the subtle and ingenious methodologies. You know, in my work especially, I go very much into showing you what is the nature of these forces that control us? Because we can't be free unless we're intimately aware of the kinds of psychic dictatorship that's being pervaded in our midst.
Lots of quotes in your book.
Yeah, because again, from the horse's mouth.
You're building upon the actual work. You're not citing references and pontificating. You're doing it the right way. You're building blocks with irrefutable, incontrovertible facts.
And I have a great belief. One of the reasons why I don't assert any major point of view in the book, I put these facts in front of people so they can make up their own minds, is because I have an unshattered faith in individuals' intelligence. I'm not like the school teachers and, you know, the scientists who condescend and look down at us. I believe we are more than intelligent. We are much more powerful than these controllers. We have the ability to change the future.
Well, that's
and we have
one of the
ability
big
to
things.
Make up our own mind.
Exactly.
That?
And that's one of the big things that they have sought so hard to keep from us, our own power. That's what it's all about. If not disempowerment, misdirection, diversion, disinformation, it all boils down to the same thing. We are being massively socially manipulated, engineered, programmed to react, not to proact, but to react from the cradle to the grave to the agenda given to us. And most people, unfortunately, are being led right along that pathway and happily following along. Be right back with Michael Tesarian in just a couple of minutes as we continue our conversation. His book is Atlantis, Alien Visitation and Genetic Manipulation. All right, let's just try and skim through some of this fascinating story in Michael's book, Atlantis, Alien Visitation and Genetic Manipulation. A lot of people, of course, talk about the ancient visitors, those who came here and interacted with humans, and there are many stories about how it is alleged they interacted. But the point is the Anunnaki, whatever you want to call them, left. That's what almost all researchers say, but Michael Tesarian doesn't think they left at all.
No, I'm very much in the line of what William Bramley, whose book I very much respect, and
what is it? Don't tell me. The Gods of Eden.
Right.
Okay,
when you look into the Celtic record, my Celtic ancestors are not telling anybody that these Nephilim characters have left, nor does the Book of Enoch, nor do the vast majority. You know, Jack Barringer, who wrote a book called Past Shock, he says that there are 30,000 texts, and that's just the ones that remain. We know how many books have been burned and how many have been sequestered away. Mm-hmm. But of the books that even remain, there's 30,000 that talk about visitations from other planets. And believe me, Yeah, and whether those are the Popol Vuh or any of the other records, they're not talking. I don't know where this whole idea that suddenly these guys are lost brothers and they've suddenly gone back to their own planet and they're just going to come down here and save us from ourselves, you know, later on. It's all total disinformation. The Nephilim are, first of all, not our brothers. They are our makers because they crossed their own alien DNA with us back approximately 50,000 years ago. And they've not gone anywhere. Their descendants have been ruling the world and moving history, manipulating history, moving it forward because of their own agendas, which I go into in the book. They are behind the major secret societies of the world.
Now, are these, excuse me, Michael, but are they the hybrid offspring of the originals, or are they the actual originals?
No, the originals, this is a very interesting thing. To answer your question from how we started this, the original Nephilim who came from outside our planet, they are not thought to be alive. Of course, these people do have very long lives, but they don't live for like 11,000 years. So it has been their descendants, certainly. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. That's why Bloodline, certain scholars like Lawrence Gardner and others, and even Gerald Hancock, have been looking into this whole question of the bloodline.
Amazing, too. Yes. What they've found is just amazing.
It's wonderful.
Well, you look at Bush and Kerry. Look, they're all related.
Precisely.
They're all in the bloodline.
Precisely.
It's not a joke.
And what people have to realize is it's not just the figures that I call the overworld figures that are bloodline. Many of the heads of banks and the heads of think tanks and the heads of schools and even people in the media circuit
sure.
are members of these cults and are bloodline connected. They may look like Smith or Jones to us, but they're certainly not the girl or boy next door. We have to understand there's unofficial families as well mm-hmm. that we don't hear about that are bloodline connected. But yeah, the original Nephilim, it's their offspring that have been controlling the world. They keep tabs on who they are. They are certainly behind the Freemasonic orders and the different secret societies who maintain mm-hmm. the records and they keep the secrets. I mean, there's a Masonic degree. Did you know that there's actually a Masonic degree, which is actually called the Knight of the Great Secret? It's
above 33rd.
That's right. It's a very high degree in Freemasonry. Mm-hmm. I have the information here somewhere. It's that actually talks about the very illustrious degrees where they are the keeper of the royal secret. That's it. It's the keepers of the royal secret. What mm-hmm. royal secret?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the secret that the Templars kept, mm-hmm. that there has mm-hmm. been forces on our planet that have genetically manipulated us.
Right.
And we talked earlier about what my motivations were for getting into this subject.
Hold on with that. We can also suggest that they have genetically manipulated us to keep us back, to keep us down, to keep us primitive,
right.
easier to control. And I that's one reason why I think we haven't, quote, learned from history, and we're still killing, because genetically we've been held back one way or the other.
Well, there's no question about that. In fact, there was actually the reason for them, as you say, doing this to us was literally to create servants, to have a race of people mm-hmm. that would serve, you know, them, because they
a serving
didn't want
class,
to be looking
of course.
After themselves. Yeah.
Right. You sure? I got you. Go ahead.
Yeah. The idea was that when you come here and you're vastly advanced, you know, you want a slave, a race of slaves. In the Popol Vuh, there's an incredible quote about that. I mean, you find it in the Bible and you find it in the Book of Enoch. But in the Popol Vuh, this is for people who are interested in the South American aspect of this. In the Popol Vuh, it says, there's a quote, it says, "Let us make him who shall nourish and sustain us.
Mm.
What shall we do to be invoked, to be remembered in earth?" This is the God speaking, right? "We have tried with our first creatures, but we could not make them venerate us. So then, let us try to make obedient, respectful beings who shall nourish and sustain us." Now, that's just one passage, which, first of all, tells us why it was of great interest to the Spanish conquistadors to be burning these books, because if that's only an example of what was in them, we know that they didn't want these chronicles to be letting us know who was doing what to whom.
Mm-hmm.
But what that passage also brings out is that, yes, you're right, they wanted servants, they wanted slaves to help them. This is what Zachariah Sitchin's work brings out, and in the Celtic tradition it's the same idea.
Now,
they would suppress the centers of intelligence of the human being
right.
and cut them off, make them divided from themselves.
That's right. There is, I can't remember the part of the brain. Am I close? Anterior commissure?
Sounds right.
Something like that. Anyway, there are portions of the brain which are basically unplugged, which are genetically unplugged. It's that simple.
That's as simple as that.
And that's one thing that keeps many people, most people, are down on the bottom.
Well, you see, also, it's been conditioning also. It's been an original genetic interference with on our genetic level, atomic level. But
there
it's also been centuries.
Michael, excuse me again, but is there not a certain percentage of our DNA that is referred to as alien DNA,
yes,
because they don't know where it came from?
Yeah, and of course you keep hearing these pop terms like junk DNA. Anything they don't want you to let you know about is either called dark matter or antimatter or junk DNA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these people are experts at tunnel visioning us, and it's called hidden in plain sight. We have all the information. You just have to know where to go to read it. In my book, there's a whole chapter on exactly what happened and why these very advanced beings, they were experts in DNA. Today, you can go into a laboratory, they sit you in a chair, they open up your skull, stick a few probes in there, and they already reduced you to the level of some sort of maniac. They
mm-hmm.
can do it with a few probes in half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine what you can do to the human being when you have the full grasp of the chromosome, you know, and the genome.
And years ago, I think maybe it was the same for you, having studied this since you were very young, when the talk was made public about the chromosome and the plug-in, the DNA, and all the rest of it, it dawned on me immediately. I said, this is a machine of some kind.
Yeah.
And it's a plug-and-play machine.
They even show you that. They even show you that subliminally in the artwork that they use for the gene, where it's this like sort of Lego-like set floating in hyperspace.
Uh-huh.
The true people, the mystics of the ancient world, who talk about the Kabbalah and the Tree of Life, they always knew that the Tree of Life was a symbol. In my book, I talk about how the old word, mm-hmm. down through the ages of the tree of genetics, the Tree of Life, was actually the Tree of Life, which mm-hmm. had 22 pathways. Which is the same thing as saying the 22 codons. The ancient people knew about this. The ancient, mm-hmm. there was genetics going on. This is the great secret that they don't want us to know about, and they throw it in front of us again in modern times. But you know something? The first genetic experiments were done in Rosslyn Institute in Rosslyn in Scotland, which is a Knights Templar bastion up there.
I didn't know.
Oh, yeah. The very first experiments were done in Rosslyn Institute. People can look this up. And, of course, those in the know who've done their homework know what Rosslyn is and who controls Rosslyn and the families that are behind the Templar resurgency in Scotland. We're doing business as usual. This is the business as usual.
How many different races of beings, there have probably been innumerable, who have visited here over the last 50,000 years. There are people coming and going here now all the time from different, different cultures and races.
There have been many. I mean, what we're talking about here is over the millions of years of this planet's history, undoubtedly, there have been many visitations. So the group that we're talking about, we have to be very specific, that the group that is referred to as the fallen angels or mm-hmm. the Nephilim mm-hmm. are individuals who came here, but instead of just doing reconnaissance or checking us out or, you know,
studying us
or doing whatever they needed to do, they broke that cardinal rule. They actually did make contact with us. And they interfered with us, and I explain in the book the whole syndrome of how they came here.
What do we call that? A galactic code of conduct or something?
Prime directive, or whatever you would like to call it.
Sure.
You know, the idea that they broke this covenant because, of course, the universe is an open system. Individual races can fly here and there, and surely we've been visited. We probably still are being visited. But what has to be understood is that this group that we refer to as the Nephilim, they actually broke the Great Commandment, and they did something that they knew that was, wrong.
They modified a species to serve them exactly.
Yes.
They customized us.
Yeah. It's a plan of hybridization. And again, the entire the science is now in for this. I mean, but I go to resources that have been in front of us all the time. Like in the Bible, for instance, you hear, you know, the famous quotes, of course, in Genesis, where they say, let us make man in our image.
Yes.
But do people know that in 1 Corinthians 15, it says something remarkable? It says, the quote goes, this is 1 Corinthians, it says, the first man, Adam, became a living being, the last Adam, a life-giving spirit. The spiritual did not come first, but the natural, and after that came the spiritual. The first man was of the dust of the earth, the second man from heaven. So we turn a few pages in the Bible, and suddenly now we're talking about two Adams, right? And one of them they're calling from heaven, from up there,
mm-hmm.
or came by way of the heavens,
mm-hmm.
And they mean the physical heavens, and then they're talking about the earth version. Well, how come we haven't been hearing the priests and the clerics talking about these two Adams?
How many
they
references?
Tell us what they want.
Right, oh, of course. Well, ever since what the council in 320 or whatever it was tried to clean the whole thing up, and they missed some of it. They missed parts. How many references in the Bible are there to off-planet intelligences? Did anybody ever count them up? I'm sure.
I don't know, but I've got hundreds in the book and in the DVD on Atlantis. There's so many, there's without number. Sometimes It's just incredible that it's been before us in the book of Job, especially in Ezekiel. Mm-hmm. It's very, very important to the book of Ezekiel is seminal to understand in this. But not just that, but in the Upanishads and the Vedas, in the Mahabharata and the Bhagavad Gita, the world is literally filled with information about this. But again, because it all comes under the hand of the Royal Academy and the Royal Society, a lot of these documents were mistranslated.
They were and misunderstood, and to this day still suppressed. But like the Vedas, the Vedic writings are beginning to be, I think, accepted by more and more.
And retranslated. We have people like J.J. Hertak and others
clarified.
Redoing it.
Yeah, it's about time. Those are absolutely astonishing ancient historical texts is what they are. Back in just a couple of minutes with Michael Tesarian, his book Atlantis, Alien Visitation, and Genetic Manipulation. This book is packed with facts and data. No speculation here. It's classic scholarship, and it's magnificently put together. And we will continue.